J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Hi, I just wanted to let you know that J.C. is out there running his mouth. Let me read you a comment that he left to someone. Hello, Beth, you Nazi cow.
I met this girl. She's just great. This girl I just adore. The problem is, she has much more than I had bargained for. She's got that style. She's got that smile. She's got the walk. She's got the talk. She's got that zing. There's just one thing. She's got a penis. She's got that flair, knows what to wear. She's got that face, that girlish grace. She's got pizzazz, too bad she has a penis. Now there's always some failure, always some flaw. Ain't that what they call Murphy's Law? But male genitalia, that's where I draw the line. Besides, hers is bigger than mine. My life's a mess, 'cause under that dress, she's got a P-E-N-I-S. Yes.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, March 3rd, 2022, here at JCOnTheLine.com. 256 days remaining in our American democratic system, as we have known. How you doing, kids? I don't deal with reality TV. I don't deal with all that nonsense on cable, and I definitely don't deal with the Kardashians. This is like the beginning of the decline of civilization as we've known it. This is just depressing and upsetting that young people, you know, people in their teens and 20s, they don't know who the vice president is, but they can tell you all the names of all the Kardashians. They seem to know nothing about, you know, history and the world and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know, when I was, you know, 19, 20 years old, I was not a normal kid because I was in college and I was studying things like broadcasting and journalism and news gathering and things like that. But I had 50 guys on my floor and like 12 floors of guys. And I remember, you know, being in conversations about what was going on in the world. I mean, that's what you do in college. You sit there and you sort of discover things about the world and you realize, you know, all of the injustices and human suffering and things like that. And you get upset about it and you start talking about it with your peers. So maybe my experience wasn't normal, but, you know, people talk about, they use the word patriotism all the time. Well, part of the idea of patriotism is sort of knowing what's going on in the world so that you can appreciate the good things that you have and you can identify the things in your country that need to be worked on a little bit. But these things that Jimmy Kimmel does, or that Jordan Klepper does for Comedy Central on The Daily Show, or, you know, when Jay Leno used to do jaywalking, you just realize how completely, I was going to say stupid, but that's not right. It's not really stupid. It's just a bad choice that you don't know anything, but it does explain a lot. You know, all of this seemed to start happening right about the time we began choosing entertainers as politicians, going all the way back to Reagan. But people ain't making fun of that anymore, you know, because in our country, look at the stuff that, you know, Bill Maher is just, we've talked about this before, just an insufferable human being. but he's got a pretty interesting show, although that's starting to suffer too, because his personality, his poisonous personality, is leaking into the show over the course of the last year or so, and it's not as much fun as it used to be. But look at Jon Stewart. Okay, he's not really on TV anymore, but he was for a long time, and he, you know, he brought up issues, and he talked the talk, but he also walked the walk. The amount of money that he raised for the first responders in New York after 9/11. I mean, stuff like that. I've said this for years. Our comedians are doing the jobs that our journalists are supposed to be doing. Journalists are scared because, you know, if they rock the boat too much, they start having their access cut off. And a reporter without contacts is pretty useless to any news gathering organization. So they got to watch out for it. Comedians, they don't have to worry about that. They can say whatever they want. But this guy in Ukraine, yeah, this guy Zelensky, supposedly they sent some sort of a death squad in to assassinate him, and somebody tipped off the Ukrainians, and they got the guys, they caught the Russians, and they were, as they say, eliminated. But I feel a compulsion to say what I said the other day, because, you know, this is all interesting right now. It's sort of, you know, in a way, fun to watch the Ukrainians turning back the Russians. And supposedly, by the way, the morale in the Russian army is not good. It's like these guys are like, they're not really into it. They don't really feel like going into Ukraine and killing people. But as I said the other day, I feel an obligation to tell you that this is temporary and this is not going to end well. This will not have a storybook ending. I would say before the end of the weekend, you know, Putin, who is not the kind of guy who likes to be publicly humiliated, couple more days, and then he's going to say, all right, let's quit dicking around here. They're already launching missiles into residential areas. They hit a school the other day. Those of you waiting for a storybook ending, I'm afraid you're waiting for something that is not going to happen. Anyhow, we watch and we wait. But going back to that Kardashian thing, she is now legally single. Judge ruled yesterday. And then Kanye puts out a claymation music video for a song called Easy that just buries Pete Davidson. What did she think was going to happen when she married this guy? What did she think? Back when I was a kid in the 1960s, racists in my neighborhood used to make the joke about what we call colored people and the fact that, well, you know, they all look alike. You know, they all look alike. You know, in their defense, it was the 1960s and there was a lot of that. And I suspect a lot of those people, as life went on, they realized the errors of their ways and just dropped all that nonsense and realized how you quickly reach a dead end with racism. It just goes nowhere. Anyhow, the New York Times, you know, we're not talking about the Bugle in South County, all right? Talking about the friggin' New York Times, runs a story about Serena Williams the other day, but uses a picture of her sister Venus. Serena is not happy about it. I don't blame her. She's probably thinking to herself, how fucking famous do I have to be before people stop confusing me with my sister? Susan Lucci, 75 years old, recently underwent a second emergency heart procedure. Pamela Anderson, another show is coming, another documentary coming to Netflix. Unlike Pam and Tommy, Pamela was involved in this project. Yesterday gave you the review of The Batman, 4 out of 5 corks. Paul Dano, who's really, really good in it, wrapped his head in saran wrap to play the Riddler in the movie. He says he does not recommend it. Jennifer Hudson getting her own daytime television talk show in the fall. Ray Liotta producing a documentary for the History Channel on, what else, the Mafia. And Randy Newman, who I had an opportunity to interview a couple of times. He did the music for a movie called James and the Giant Peach. It was a Roald Dahl thing. And the movie didn't go anywhere, just it was a big flop. But I got to interview Randy Newman and got to interview him about a lot of other stuff. I went into this was back in the 90s. First thing I remember about the interview is I went in, sat down, and he went, oh, St. Louis, huh? I said, yeah. He goes, my family is like best friends with Leonard Slatkin, who you'll recall was the director of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra back in the day. And Randy Newman, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Martin Short, they all sat down and they wrote The Three Amigos together. A lot of people don't know this because it's not credited, but Randy Newman is the voice of the Laughing Bush in that movie. But he was talking about doing the movie, doing the music rather for The Natural, and that he felt a lot of pressure because it's like, okay, you got to get him around those bases in that final scene, and that now iconic da-da-da-da-da-da came to him, and you know, the rest is history. Marilyn Manson suing Evan Rachel Wood for defamation over her claims that he abused her when they dated a decade ago. Evan's documentary on the subject, Phoenix Rising, hits HBO this month. Oh, good. If you like that dancing show, so you think you can dance, it's coming back to Fox this summer after a three-year hiatus because of the pandemic. Auditions have already begun. More information about the host and the judges will be announced later. I'm doing all this lightweight show business stuff here today. Oh, I did want to mention this. The series premiere of Joe versus Carol on Peacock today. Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live as Carol Baskin, and a guy named John Cameron Mitchell as Joe Exotic. Again, that's today. Starts on Peacock. On Hulu, we have the big-eyed Amanda Seyfried playing Elizabeth Holmes, the CEO of that biotech company, Theranos, that defrauded her investors after claiming she developed a revolutionary blood testing method. William H. Macy is in this. Laurie Metcalf. And The Tourist on HBO Max, Jamie Dornan from 50 Shades, wakes up in an Australian hospital. Oh, God, here we go with amnesia. That's when you know a writer is out of ideas, when they either do the amnesia thing or the evil twin thing. It goes all the way back to the 60s and 70s. I think they did one of those on like Mod Squad or something, like Charlie's Angels. You know, there's always an evil twin. Somebody was always having amnesia. You know, when you're a kid and you're watching this in the 60s and 70s, you grow up thinking that amnesia and evil twins are going to be a lot bigger problem than you would have thought. It's like quicksand. I remember thinking to myself, I was 6, 7 years old watching Zimbamba. Thinking to myself, shit, I better watch out. Better watch out for the quicksand. I just figured it was going to be, you know, something I was going to run into on a regular basis. Your St. Louis Blues. 3 shots, 3 goals in a 2-minute and 14-second span in last night's game against the Rangers, and they still ended up losing. Now, how the hell do you do that? People are like, hockey? It's summer! Well, it was yesterday, the last 2 days. 82 yesterday. That's over for a couple of days. Saturday, we'll be back into the mid-70s. And then big storms come in Saturday night and then Sunday into Monday. Really, really heavy rain. Could get a lot of flooding in some areas. Today's Thursday. We'll get an update tomorrow and talk about it tomorrow and see if it's anything that will affect you. There are legendary stories about Andy Griffith, you know, because on television, it's like, you know, just played this great dad and the character was a sheriff, but he didn't carry a gun. And he always made sure that Barney ended up looking good, even though he was a complete fuck up and just seemed like the most easygoing guy, the kind of guy that you would want for the sheriff in your town. Then he did the Matlock thing. But if you read stuff about Andy Griffith, you find out that he was a son of a bitch. And on this date in 1986, I got a little taste of that because I was doing a satellite interview. And the way this works is you go down to the TV station, Channel 5 in this particular case, and you sit in a little room. There is a television monitor in front of you, and you are watching all of the interviews for the previous city. So in other words, they get there about 20 minutes early, and I watch his 5-minute interview with Denver. And then they go, okay, Andy, you're now Mr. Griffith. Okay, Mr. Griffith, now you're in San Diego. And then that's over. And it's now you're in Denver, Mr. Griffith. And then finally they say, okay, we're going to St. Louis. And they would make the adjustment in the satellite. And then they'd say, go ahead, JC, in St. Louis. Hello, Mr. Griffith. It's JC. Hello, JC. How are you today? And then you do your interview. But right before they came to me, I guess Andy Griffith didn't realize that people could hear him. And he was dressing down somebody on that staff about something. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, it's true. I mean, he was really on the guy. And on this date in 2006, A bunch of us media types were invited down to Busch Stadium. They gave us hard hats. It was a very cold day. Remember that? The sun was out, but it was cold. And they took us on about an hour-long tour of the brand new ballpark, which was in the process of being completed. Got some cool pictures I'm going to be putting on Facebook later on today, the showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Really, really cool pictures to see the inside of Busch Stadium, but no seats in a big chunk of the place, and the field not really even there. All that, you know, sort of came last. And in fact, I've talked about this before, my father-in-law, my wife's dad, was a union electrician at the time and did all the fiber optic wiring for the Busch Stadium scoreboard. So every time you look up at that scoreboard, you can think of Mike Clark. This is one of these pieces that I am convinced magazine and newspaper people put together just so they can sit back and laugh and imagine all of us threatening the life of a coworker because of an argument over something like the Rolling Stone list of the greatest movies of the 1980s. They put this thing out. It's like a ticking time bomb. You're standing at the water cooler, and the next thing you know, you're thinking to yourself, why do they give us paper cups? If I had a real piece of glass here, I could cut my coworker's throat because he doesn't agree with my list of the best movies of the 1980s. All right, so here we go. At number 20, Blowout. That was that John Travolta thing. That was not even the best John Travolta movie. Aaron, Something Wild at 19, Say Anything. That's the John Cusack thing. We were just talking about that the other day, Rod Reiner movie. Raising Arizona, 1987, no argument there. The Shining at 16. Die Hard at 15. Brazil, 14. The Thing, Come and See, which I don't even remember. Sex, Lies, and Videotape, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Thin Blue Line at 9. Stranger Than Paradise at 8. Blade Runner, Shoa at 6. Ran, Blue Velvet, Raging Bull. A lot of people would say, wait a minute, Raging Bull, that should be the number one movie. It's not. Videodrome is number 2. And according to Rolling Stone, the best movie, the greatest movie of the 1980s was Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing. Good movie, definitely belongs in the top 20 of the 1980s, but not number one. A couple of other highlights, they got E.T. at 27, The Terminator at 28, Fast Times at Ridgemont High is 32, Empire Strikes Back at 37, Aliens is 51, Big is number 56. That should have been higher on the list. Bull Durham at 58. The Evil Dead at number 62. Back to the Future only gets number 65. That, for me, for the 1980s, would have been in the top five. Caddyshack at number 69. Ghostbusters, 73. Heathers at 76. The Little Mermaid at 83. Airplane only gets 92. Scarface gets number 96. All right, late night tonight, Jimmy Fallon's got Dua Lipa. Jimmy Kimmel, Jamie Dornan, we're just talking about him. Kyle MacLachlan, I'm with Colbert. James Corden has Camila Cabello and Nathan Lane. Amy Poehler and Jeffrey Wright, who is in the new Batman movie, him, not her, on with Seth Meyers. In fact, Camila Cabello celebrating birthday number 25. Boy, to have all that money at 25. Wow. Jessica Biel, Mrs. Justin Timberlake, is number 40. Let's see, what's he going to give her for her 40th birthday? I'm just picturing him up early this morning cutting a hole in a box. Never mind. David Faustino, Bud Bundy, married children, is 48. Julie Bowen from Modern Family, 52. Tone Loke, Wild Thing, number 56. Jackie Joyner-Kersee, one of the sweetest women you will ever know, and just happens to be the greatest female track and field athlete ever, turned 60 today. She is an absolute delight to be around. Herschel Walker used to be a Georgia Bulldog, won the Heisman Trophy in 82, which he says he doesn't remember receiving. He suffers from DID, that is dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as multiple personality disorder. Herschel says, get this, that his accomplishments were not achieved by him, but by his alters. And this is the 31st anniversary of the Rodney King beating back in 1991. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. If you ever read up about stories regarding people who have been hit by lightning, it's really weird. There's a real high incidence of suicide. People, in other words, you're out walking, you get hit by lightning, you survive, but then 10 years later, you kill yourself. It's amazing how often it happens. You know, it gets hit by lightning all the time is these forester guys and women. You know, your job is to make sure, you know, sit in those towers. They give you a set of binoculars and they just say, just keep looking around and make sure if you see smoke, get on the walkie-talkie right away and let us know. That's your job. The terrain, by the way, is not navigable. So they parachute your supplies in. And so you're like 17 and you spend the entire summer by yourself sitting up there in this perch looking for forest fires. And those people get hit by lightning all the time. Well, when somebody is struck, the mark that appears on them afterwards looks like a detailed silhouette of a fern tree. Now, this occurs because the capillaries beneath their skin rupture from the shock of the electrical discharge. In most cases, the marks are not permanent. They could even disappear within a couple of days. I had a conversation with Dave Murray once. As a matter of fact, I think we have in the archives, don't we? Shoot, I'm looking through the archives right now and I don't see it. I put in Dave, I put in Murray, and I put in diarrhea. Yeah, it's not coming up. Might be in one of the other computers. Got to get all this stuff rounded up one of these days. Anyhow, the word diarrhea comes from a Greek word that means flowing through. That's how it feels, too. The reason I bring Dave into it is because I asked him, you know, you're in a suit and a tie, and you're standing there for the next 4 minutes doing a weather forecast. And you know how it can be. All of a sudden, you're thinking to yourself, I got to go, and I got to go now, like right now. What do you do then? And Dave says he's had some close calls. And at TV stations, there's never a bathroom that's like right around the corner. It's always down the hall or on another floor or something like that. I don't know if this works for women. I do know that I've tried it, and it does help. It doesn't eliminate the problem, but it really does help. Because, you know, when you got to go and you're in the car, for example, and you're driving along and you're thinking to yourself, I got to go, I got to go. I think I can make it. Oh, I hope I can make it. I hope I can make it. I hope I can make it. And somehow your butthole seems to know how close you are to the house. Because the closer you do get to home, the more urgent the feeling seems to be. There's a reason for that. Because you are, in your mind, picturing yourself sitting on the toilet, shall we say, eliminating the problem, okay? So as you're thinking about that, it is relaxing that muscle down there. And what I was told, and like I said, I've tried it, it does work. And again, I don't think that I have anything that can help women, but for guys, it does work. You're supposed to think about sex. If you think about sex as that one part of your body starts to become stimulated a little bit psychologically, it seems to close off the other valve, if you know what I mean. You think I'm kidding? Next time it happens to you, try it. You'll thank me. And so will the upholstery of your front seat. There's a doggy daycare and boarding franchise called Camp Run-A-Mutt. And they put out a list of the top 20 dog names that they've seen, which includes more than 60,000 dogs across all their locations. Top 20 common names: Charlie, Luna, Bella, Bailey, Lucy, Max, Cooper, Daisy, Lola, Kona, Stella, Buddy, Coco, Penny, Oliver, Riley, Molly, Sadie, Milo, and Jack. They also put out a list of the top 10 unique dog names. They are Barnaby Jones, Beetlejuice, Deputy Dog, Bubblegum, Mr. Bojangles, Cholly, probably Cholly, C-H-O-L-L-Y, Barkamedes, which I think is that a biblical thing? Moo Moo, Apple Strudel, and Boss Lady. Pay attention to this story, guys. This is how you end up in the doghouse for the rest of your life. A woman who's been trying to get pregnant went to Reddit to vent about a very dumb suggestion her husband came up with. She's 34, he's 37, and they've been struggling to conceive. So her younger sister, who's 30, recently offered to be their surrogate and carry the baby for them. But then the husband started looking into how much the whole IVF thing would cost, the in vitro thing, and suggested he just get her sister pregnant the old-fashioned way. He wants to boink her. He doesn't get why that's a big deal, but his wife is not into it. She won't even ask her sister if she's willing. She says she'd freak out. The husband got so angry when she said no and claims it's just because he wants kids so bad. Right. So now she doesn't know what to do. A few people online think she should divorce him. Others say skipping IVF isn't that crazy, but they think that she should go to the turkey baster method. The 30-year-old sister. Oh, my God. And Madonna, who just turned 63, was on Instagram yesterday showing off her butt again. There were no survivors.
Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama, didn't mean to make you cry. If I'm not back again this time tomorrow, carry on, as if nothing really matters.
Isolated vocals on Freddie Mercury right there. I'll play the whole thing for you one of these days. What we've been doing all this week is, and this was just a random thing I came up with, we've had so many mega musicians, iconic musicians, on the show over the years, and I just figured I would pick out five of them and run them. We ran Bob Seger on Monday. And if you missed any of these, go ahead and pick it up on the replay, because we have the shows all archived here. So just go to Monday's show. That would be the 24th. Great interview with Bob Seger. Then we did Roger Daltrey on Tuesday. And then yesterday was Linda Ronstadt. And today is Brian May. Fascinating guy. In addition to being one of the greatest musicians of all time, he's also an astrophysicist. You talk to the guy, you get the idea that he's using about 2% of his brain to have the conversation with you. Just one of these guys who is smart. And seems to like to reminisce about his days with Freddie Mercury. He was plugging the Bohemian Rhapsody stage show, which you may have gotten a chance to see. It was very successful. So we go back a handful of years to our conversation with Brian May of Queen.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing?
I'm very good, Mr. Corcoran. How are you doing?
Mr. Corcoran, suddenly the respect I so richly deserve.
You need some respect, man.
11 years in London, 15 million people have already seen it. What's the response been overseas?
It's been great everywhere, I must say. You know, and it's something we've worked very hard at, and particularly our director and writer, Ben, has worked incredibly hard to make sure that this show is never rubber stamped. It's always evolving and it's always aware of where it is. So, you know, if you see the All-American version, which is coming your way soon, you know, you'll see the story of We Will Rock You, but it's nested in the history of rock and roll in the USA and the future of rock and roll in the USA. And it's funny, you know, it'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry a little bit, and you'll come out smiling.
Explain the storyline of the production. Oh. I know that the musical instruments and composers are forbidden. It's like an us versus them environment. Just talk a little bit about that storyline.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea, which is purely Ben's, you know, because we were wrestling with an autobiographical format for the musical, which just wasn't going to work. And Ben said, no, it's all about kids in the future. And the kids realized that in the distant past, there was something called rock and roll, which enabled them to be free. But they don't know what rock and roll is. So that's the whole premise of it, really. And their whole journey is to try and find what rock and roll is. And there's a legend which says that there's an ancient instrument buried somewhere which has the spirit of rock and roll in it. So they're trying to find it. It's like an Arthurian legend. It's like, you know, the Lady of the Lake and the Sword in the Stone. And it's very funny. It's also satirical because what they're fighting against is not being physically manacled, but being enslaved by marketing and spin and the internet and not being allowed to think for themselves. So it's very relevant to today, you know, and you know, everything in this world is auto-tuned, and, you know, the world is going that way, it seems.
Would you say that the show centers more on the band as a whole, Freddie, or the music, or what is the essence of the production?
The essence is a fantasy, and that's very much in line with what Queen were about. You know, it's entertainment, it's fantasy. There is a subtext of satire, and there's a subtext of the journey that we made as Queen, you know, to find our freedom. So by the end of the story, you'll realize what it's about. You know, you'll realize that we are entwined in the story. But it's not a biography at all. You know, it's a celebration of what rock music is and how it makes people free.
I want to talk about Bohemian Rhapsody for a moment. The song came out in the middle of 1970s. I was on the radio. We played it. It had a great run. And then radio stations played it occasionally. You know, it was in some sort of rotation. But then in the early 1990s, Mike Myers and Dana Carvey used the song in a scene in the Wayne's World movie. And Bohemian Rhapsody just exploded in popularity again. And since that point, I think the song has been bigger than it was when it originally came out in the 1970s. You guys must have just shook your heads in disbelief over that.
It was great. You know, it's funny to, because the scene was very much like us. You know, they're kind of sending it up. They're nodding their heads in the car, you know, and they're rocking or whatever. It's exactly like we were, really. We kind of sent ourselves up as well at the time. Yeah, it's great to see it. And Bohemian Rhapsody has crossed every generation now, which is great. You know, and actually, the music of Queen seems to connect with every generation, which is something which we're very fortunate to experience.
Brian, rock and roll bands are a lot like families, and a lot of the time the guys in the bands are like brothers. Brothers love each other. Brothers fight. Tell me something about your relationship with Freddie that still stays with you today, but then I want you to tell me a story about maybe something you guys fought about.
Well, you know, we were a family, and in a sense we still are. You know, and, you know, if you lose your dad, you know, your dad's still part of your family. You know, so Freddie's still very much with us. It was a great time. You know, I don't know, we weren't put together. It was an organic thing. Somehow the planets were aligned and the four of us got together and we just got on great, and musically we fitted. It was an incredibly lucky thing. And the relationship was very democratic, I suppose, you know, and Freddie particularly, you know, everyone used to come up to Freddie and say, oh, you're the leader, huh? And he'd say, no, I'm not the leader. I sing and, you know, we create together, which was very kind of generous of him. And he's a generous guy, you know, he's generous to a fault. I always remember one of his favorite toys was when he first got a Polaroid camera, you know, and instantly you got the picture that you just taken. And he basically just took pictures of everybody and gave them all away. So Fred, that's very typical Freddie, you know, you have this, darling, you know. So, yeah, and he was generous to a fault. I remember him working long hours in the studio doing something secretly. And I said, what the hell are you doing, Freddie? You know, and he said, I've made a tape of all your guitar solos. And I've strung it all together, and I've made an art form of it, and it's a present for you. You know, I can't find it. One day I'll find that tape. It was on cassette.
No kidding. Imagine what that would be worth today, not only to you personally,
cool.
but to everybody.
It's hard to hold on. Hard to hold on to stuff throughout.
When people walk out of the theater, what do you hope the audience will have taken with them about the story and about the show?
Well, basically, they take joy with them. You know, that's what happened. They go out kind of punching the air and smiling and singing, and that's what you want, really, because what you've given them is an escape from their daily worries. They take something else, too. They get some humorous takes on the way life is, and I think it's quite thought-provoking, you know, what really is music, what is freedom, and what is really live. You know, do we have anything live left in our world? So, yeah, they'll take a lot of stuff, but, you know, they'll be singing the tunes, and, you know, there are some good tunes in there. I'm not going to lie to you, there's some good tunes. And basically, they feel they had a great time, and they escaped from their daily life, I think, and they want to bring their friends back. They want to bring their dads and their moms and their kids and their grandkids and whatever. So it's a regenerative thing. That's why 15 million people have seen it around the world, because they keep coming back.
And one last question, Brian. Rolling Stone magazine marked you as number 26 on the list of greatest guitarists of all time. Are there days when you think to yourself, bring those 25 guys over and I will show them a thing or three?
No. You know what? No. I really don't care. It's just, you know, guitar playing is not a competition. And I don't want to seem ungrateful that people mention me, you know, but basically it's about connecting. It's about making music and not just wheedling away, you know. So, you know, guitar to me is a vehicle for a song, for an idea, for a feeling. And I don't really care what number I am in somebody's chart.
Well, that is disgustingly well-adjusted, let me tell you.
Thank you, buddy. You know, I don't want to seem ungrateful. It's nice. I'm very honored that people want to put me in a position like that. But basically, I just make music, and I love it.
Brian May, have enjoyed your work for years and years and years. Congratulations on all your success. We will rock you. Thanks, Brian.
Too right. Thanks, man.
Nice guy. Enjoyed talking to him. Brian May of Queen. All right, one more day tomorrow. Who will I choose for the final day of this little tribute to the fine musicians we've had on the show over the course of the last, well, almost 38 years now? You'll have to tune in tomorrow to find out. Friday's edition of the podcast. Thursdays is in the can for March 3rd, 2022, 256 days remaining in our American system of government as we have known it. We archive everything right here at jcontheline.com. We publish right about 7 o'clock every Monday through Friday. Email me, jc at jcontheline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. We're in the top 10 of all podcasts in the country. Let's stay there. Please continue to spread the word. Have a great day. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.